Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 290.
This week on the podcast, Puerto Rico is even more fucked than we told you they were.
And Tuesday is primary day in California, so don't get the wrong answers.
Plus, Tom Perez apparently has learned a lot from the Trump era, like that promises made of words don't mean anything.
And we've got scientific proof that electing Democrats will lower your uninsured rate.
Plus, Donald Trump will always forgive for the price of one giant novelty envelope.
And Roseanne Barr will now continue her nervous breakdown without ABC's support.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
We're back.
We're back.
Yeah.
Another unplanned vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Another victorious return.
And just in time.
We were never going to leave you high and dry for the primary in California.
No.
Because that's like our lifeblood.
First off, we didn't. We already told you what to do with the props, so you knew we were on it.
Yeah.
Like, and so if you thought that we had somehow forgot.
If you are a person who can't deal with voting for any of the other offices... Email us. We'll tell you how to vote.
Yeah.
We're not too good to tell you how to vote.
Yeah.
We trust you to do the research, but we also
don't... send you pictures of our ballots.
Exactly.
We're not proud.
No, we're not proud, and...
We will let you copy from us. We're those type of people.
Yeah, we're not here to tell you that just because you didn't have hours to sit and research every of the 500 judges running and whatever, that you're like a bad citizen.
I did that. And you know
Brent
what?
Did it.
Guess what?
Guess who copied off of him?
So... If you don't want to do it, look, I get it. It was fucking painful.
Yeah,
it ruined an entire evening of mine.
I came to Brent with a litmus test of one judge that I knew was the right answer in a tricky race.
Right.
And when he got it right, I was like, I'm going to copy all the rest of your answers.
Also, I'll tell you, we should, it was brought to my attention, there's this website called Voter's Edge.
Yes.
Now, we'll happily tell you the answers, but if you don't live in our district or whatever, it's really great because it's like... you basically enter your address, and then it brings up your ballot, and then candidates can basically, they can give statements on there, and it will also list where every dime of their
donations have come from.
It will tell you everybody who has endorsed them. They can put videos on there, so a lot of them, like, have their campaign commercials on there, and... it's like
really great resource, thorough,
and like
only
I was not aware of it until now. So it's really great. So you can go there as well.
It's only in this state, so
but if you want to ruin an evening,
right? If you want to ruin an evening, or you care at least about the top races,
right?
And want to have your own opinion about them,
right?
We'll share our opinion with you.
We're going to
not afraid.
Shortly.
We're going to, but but if you have your own opinion, feel free to do the research yourself on Voter's Edge. It's a good resource.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, though, before we dive in, we have been dedicated to bringing you the latest in Puerto Rico news while no one else in the media has wanted to.
And you know what? And a lot of times we've had to dig for it.
Yeah, it's been hard to find, especially the last few months.
This week, we did not have to dig for it.
No, this week, people came to me with the news.
Yeah.
I was told the news apropos of nothing one morning.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, too, because like there was this study that came out that we're going to tell you about, but it came out on the same day that Roseanne went nuts and then got canceled on ABC.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get there later. But it was interesting because like nobody was talking about it. And at the time, it was frustrating for me following the news. But then the next day, everybody was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Stop talking about fucking Roseanne. She's a crazy troll.
Right.
And like everybody in Puerto Rico died.
Yeah, exactly.
So like pay attention. So it was actually like while the Roseanne thing on the day that this report came out wasn't good for news of the report, it actually sort of, I think, ended up being like a thing because people were outraged that we spent the entire day talking about Roseanne, basically.
I mean, it was outrageous because as you'll recall, the official death toll for the Hurricane Maria disaster in Puerto Rico was 64. It remains 64. Now, we have brought you other numbers. There have been other more respectable estimates that put it closer to 1,000. I think we brought you 1,200 at one point. These have been done either by schools or news sources or whatever.
Right. And they've been sort of like calling families, and they've been calling funeral home directors and things like that to basically sort of like piece together like some semblance of like the right number, because in no world is it 64.
No, and also one body that was not looking to piece together the correct number seemed to be the U.S. government.
Was our government or the Puerto Rican government.
Right. They both seem cool with the 64 number. They're ready to roll with it.
They were good. Yeah.
But anyway, there was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine from a couple authors from Harvard last week that put the estimate at 4,645 people.
Yeah.
That's thousands more than at our highest estimate. And we've been looking for the highest estimates. Yeah. We have not been looking for the lowest estimates. That's thousands more than we were seeing.
And they did it by going to, I think they interviewed like something like 3,000 homes in Puerto Rico, like randomly like around, and then basically like asking them about, you know, deaths in the household or in the community, basically. Yeah. So that's how they came up with that number. So it was like, that is sort of like that's the best way to come up with really the number, because
ask people if people died, find out.
Someone is going to know whether, you know, a couple people in their house died.
Yeah.
Like that's
and
a thing.
That the only know. Thing that maybe is worth considering with this is the number could be higher because people who live alone obviously had no one home to report that they had died.
If anything, they said in this report that if anything, this number is low.
Yeah. So that's what we're looking at, you guys. And we're looking at that. Meanwhile, both the Puerto Rican and the United States government seem to have, they were like, we'll look into it.
We'll look into it,
But seem to have no interest in taking these numbers seriously and doing this work themselves. And so we need to do better.
Yeah, we like.
Because hurricane season is coming back.
Yeah, and this is just sort of, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it seems to me like, even if your Republican just doesn't give a shit about Puerto Rico, and I'm not saying all of them, because certainly we have a president. We have a leader of the party who doesn't give a shit about Puerto Rico.
And also, Puerto Rico is not a Democratic territory.
Well, right,
it's a very moderate sort of swing territory.
But we can't be living in a world where one of our territories has 5,000 or more people die because a storm came through. When a storm comes through, basically every year there.
Well,
so, and there's still thousands of people without power there. Like, this can't be what... This can't be what's happening.
No.
In America.
And this is
just not.
This is also like, this is the fault of infrastructure in Puerto Rico, because a lot of these deaths occurred because there were no services in the aftermath of the storm. This is not just the fault of the storm. So the idea that somehow like something crazy happened and there was nothing we could do, because that's something that I've been hearing in response to these numbers, is not an accurate portrayal of what happened. Because what happened was we didn't get help to people.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, so, you know, some people, you know, I literally in the story, and I didn't even pull it, but there was like a story about like someone who died from like in a lantern fire.
Right.
That's hurricane related.
Right.
Because
why did she need a lantern?
Because it took us freaking however long to get electricity to the island, and there are still some people who don't have it there. So that's hurricane related. So it's not, the hurricane itself did not kill almost 5,000 people, but
maybe it doesn't matter. But it doesn't
matter whether it was the earthquake or the earthquake.
The natural disaster.
That's what's going to kill us.
Right.
The earthquake.
We have those on the mind at all times.
The hurricane. Because if it's related, it doesn't matter whether it was the actual storm or not. Because
if it's a related death, then it was preventable.
Right. Well, I was going to say, that's almost more troubling.
It's more troubling.
A lantern death is more troubling than just getting
like a tree falling
washed
on your
away
head.
By the storm.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they would have had electricity, like, then that, you know, there's...
That's not an accidental death.
Right.
That's a death that was caused by us not giving services to people in need in the aftermath of a disaster.
Yeah.
So that is our responsibility.
Yeah.
In any case, I was excited to live in a time when everyone was talking about the Puerto Rico stuff instead of just us.
Yeah. Because it was sad that everyone was seeming so shocked by it.
I know. Well,
I was shocked too, but in the sense that like, oh my God, Puerto Rico is still a problem? Yeah, fuckers. Puerto Rico is still a problem.
It's a problem if Bren and I, who have been diligently looking for this news every week and putting
it
at the top of our podcast, we're shocked by that number.
Yeah, exactly.
We have been looking for the highest estimates.
Yeah.
We have done that every week.
Right.
We have been following.
Yeah, we've told you the highest
estimates. We've told you the highest estimates that we could find. If it was shocking even to us, and, you know, I am not shocked to hear that thousands of people died in a storm where we offered almost no help to people who were in a dire circumstance stranded on an island with no power.
Yeah.
But I was sort of like, is that the number we've arrived at now? Because a few months ago, it was 1,200.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
That was the number those of us in the know were saying.
Yeah,
so, in any case. But moving on to the primaries, our lifeblood, the thing we live for.
Yeah.
Elections. Listen, we said it at the top and we'll say it again. We'll tell you who to vote for.
Yeah.
So don't be shy about asking.
Right.
Tweet us, email us. We're at braintrustapproved@gmail.com. We're just at BraintrustLive on Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll tell you what to do.
Yeah.
If you don't have our prop cheat sheet already, it's up on Facebook. It's at the top of our page. Also go and get that.
It's yes, yes, no, yes, yes.
One thing that you don't need to do is be spending the rest of your life looking into these props. They are boring and
that was probably where you did that.
Right. The reason I felt okay about cheating on the judges was because I did all the prop research. But here's the thing. Even if you're not sure you're politically aligned with us, if you know, whatever, we explain our reasoning in a pretty detailed manner in the prop cheat sheet. So you can read the cheat sheet and talk knowledgeably about why you voted the way you did.
Yes, that's very true. Like on Prop 70, which is the sort of one that requires you to, Lila got to learn all about cap and trade and the pros and cons of cap and trade. You explained it very well. So it's like you might read it and decide that you don't like cap and trade and, and that you want there to be 2/3 majority required to do certain things with that money. And then you would... Even if you disagree with us, which you shouldn't, because we're always right.
Right, we're right. But if you...
You would be able to have a conversation with somebody about it.
Yeah.
And it's not long.
No, it's not long. And it's also, considering that cap and trade is basically the centerpiece of our environmental plan in this state, you should find out what it is.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So in any case, that's worth looking up online. We, before we get into any of the state level races, wanted to talk about some of the crazy House races that are going on in California. Because as you know, with the jungle primary system, when there's an open seat... Even when there's not, things get a little complicated in the primary process.
This is the first election, and we obviously always and for years have been talking in detail about elections. And I have sort of been wishy-washy on the jungle primary system, and in a few cases sort of like even found it to be moderately entertaining.
Right.
This specific primary, and I don't know if I don't know if it's because I'm more dialed in this time.
No, it's because this is an unusual year and there are open seats.
My rage for this system is really freaking high.
Yeah.
Well, it's really high. So we'll tell you.
Here's where we stand.
Yeah.
The Democrats need 24 seats to flip the House. In the federal House, not the state House. There are 7 districts in California where Hillary won the district, but we have Republican representatives currently repping them.
Right. Now, we don't think we're going to flip all of those.
We're not going to flip all of them.
At the same time that Hillary Clinton was winning... those districts, Republicans were in a few cases being reelected in landslides as well. So people like their congresspeople in some of these districts, we're not going to win all 7 of those.
No.
But certainly there are some that are winnable, and we're going to tell you about 2 of them specifically right now.
And these are both open seats.
They're both open seats.
And both open seats for fairly well-known Republicans. The first being Daryl Issa's
seat.
Daryl Issa not coming back.
No. And thank God.
Thank God.
Even if somehow we accidentally end up with a Republican in that seat, like, could they be worse? Like, I just don't see a world in which they could.
I don't
really
believe.
He's awful.
He's a nightmare person. he's awful. But so Hillary won his district by 7.5%.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big margin in a district that elected Daryl Issa.
Yeah.
And so it's in both of these worth sort of keeping that in mind as we discuss the difficulties Democrats are having getting on the ballot.
Right.
The latest polling in Daryl Issa's district shows that it's looking pretty good that a Democrat gets on the ballot.
Yes, but the polling is all over the place.
The polling is all over the place, and the one person in the lead in the primary race is a Republican. So there is a definite Republican getting onto the ballot, and then there's 3 Democrats behind her, and then the next Republican is right behind them.
Yeah.
So, again, the way the primary system works here, you have a big open primary with everyone from every party running. The top 2 vote-getters advance to the general.
32 people running for governor.
It's a runoff. Yeah, we have 32 people running for governor. Yeah,
so it's crazy.
As last time, we had 34 people running for Senate. This time, I think we have 27.
Yeah.
I mean, it's chaos. You can't even find your candidate on the list.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, the Republican in that district has 24% in the polls.
Yeah.
The 3 Democrats behind her have 11, 11, and 10%.
Some polling has the leading Democrat and that Republican a little bit closer. So that one is, everybody seems to sort of be cautiously optimistic that we're going to have a Democrat.
But it's difficult to poll these races.
It's difficult to poll.
Because no one understands, first of all, as we'll show you in some later races, there's often a large undecided number.
Yeah. Well, and it's because of confusion.
It's because of confusion, and also because strategy has to play so much of a role in who you vote for, because you need to make sure someone from your party advances.
Yeah.
So if you have 18 Democrats running and 2 Republicans, even if the district is only 12% Republican district, the vote might get split amongst the Democrats, and 2 Republicans are suddenly your only options for running.
And that's what I think is so... I mean, there's a few things that are annoying about the system, specifically that... you could end up with a Democrat not on the ballot, but also just the need to be so mindful and strategic. You should always be voting strategically to a degree, in the sense that, like, you should be I mean, strategically is maybe the wrong word, but you should be in voting like as an informed person, right. And this requires you to sort of be a more informed, for lack of a better way of putting it, to be informed about something beyond just the issues in the race. Right, exactly. That's the thing. Like,
informed about another layer.
You should be able to go to the poll and confidently vote for the person
that represents your views.
That represents your views. And this primary system that we have requires you to think past that. There was a really good story on KPCC this week, mm-hmm. which is our local NPR station, or one of them anyway. And they were down there in these districts, and they were talking to voters and informed voters, people who vote often,
right.
who were just sort of like, we're floundering down here because they really just don't know what to do. There's so many Democrats. They're all in a pack with each other. They want to make sure that one gets on the ballot, but they don't know what the right thing to do is. They don't know which person is the quote unquote most viable. They don't know, like, and when you look at the polling, when there's three of them within a percentage of each other, like at 11 and 10, there is no way to know because you would want to sort of just pick the person. I've been looking at polls this week to pick who I'm voting for governor and things like that, because I want to make sure that the person who I actually want to win is running against someone
who's a weak candidate.
But this is just, it's madness. There's truly just no way to know, and that's upsetting.
Yeah, well, and also voting should be easy enough that as long as you did the research to figure out why you're voting for a person,
right.
That should be the only layer you have to think about. Exactly. You shouldn't also have to know about strategy voting beyond that. And I am someone who doesn't believe in strategy voting regardless.
Sure.
You know, that's why when we go, and especially, you know, there is strategy voting when you are in sort of a state with a small margin in a presidential race and you're not really sure what's going to happen.
Sure.
In general, though, I think it's always better to vote for the person that's going to make sure that you vote. You want to go to the polls and vote for someone you're excited to vote for so that you show up to vote.
Concur.
And this makes it so hard to know who that person is.
It does. Yeah, it really does.
Because it also complicates their campaign.
Yeah.
Because then suddenly you can't, they have to differentiate themselves. So they start running negative campaigns against each other.
Yeah.
And then you're not really sure. All the Democrats seem like assholes at that point.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It's because they're not really running against a Republican at that point. Like it's.
And that is exactly what's happened in this next race that we're going to tell you about.
So this because is Ed this Royce's seat.
This is even crazier, actually.
Yes.
We started with the less crazy of the two that we're going to tell you about.
We're warming up. But Ed Royce's seat is a seat that Hillary won, or a district that Hillary won by 9 points. So it's an even bigger margin in that seat. And also, Ed Royce didn't drop out until after the primary process had started.
Right. So that's that's what had happened, because the DCCC was actually sort of like initially like welcomed all of the candidates in here. This is like a district that, you know, these are, I think, both in... they're sort of like near San Diego. They're in Orange County.
Yeah.
And they're sort of, you know, they're conservative areas, even though Hillary won. But they're conservative sort of like in the rich person.
Right. They're not Trump conservative, but they're like Mitt Romney conservative.
Right. So it's like it makes sense that this is a world where Hillary would win and also Ed Royce would win. Anyway, so, but this is, so Ed Royce pulls out after all of these Democrats already entered the primary. And then the DCCC is like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Because they're like, actually, we don't want all of these people in here, because now we would like to win this race. I think they sort of like initially thought that Ed Royce would just continue on being reelected.
Right. And they would get a deeper bench out of it. They'd get people with some experience running.
Right.
It's like, that's a good benefit to the party.
And then it was like, oh, shit. We got to start getting people to drop out. We have to start threatening people. They did. Like, there was a woman in the race who was like early... endorsed by
Emily's List,
and then Royce dropped out, and like the DCCC was like, you have to drop out because if you don't, like your funding is going to
we'll basically pull all your funding from our friends,
right? From our outside groups,
yeah.
And that happened. So like Emily's List like basically like stopped giving her money, so she ultimately dropped out. So and you know I have mixed feelings about this because on some level, like. Obviously, I don't want the DCCC or the DNC sort of like meddling in these races.
Right.
But I feel like if there was ever a time to sort of like not necessarily demand people be dropping out, but like to offer some sort of guidance.
Yeah.
Like it would be nice for the people in the last district that we just told you about to like have some sort of like, you know, like here's what we think that you should do. And you can sort of write them off as sort of like asshats like they are because they are. But like, you know, On some level, I sort of get why they're meddling here. Because they're meddling for a good cause.
I feel like the problem that I have with it is that their strategy is not any better than anyone else's. Like,
no,
they
not.
Also don't know what to do these jungle primaries. No, them meddling is just sort of like a voice for not change.
Totally.
Meddling when anyone could. I mean, yeah. We should all be meddling.
Yeah, there's no perfect.
There's no solution here.
There's no solution.
Yeah. And the, you know, and here, what they're meddling ultimately is always about is money.
Yeah.
Which means that the only people who can afford to stay in the race that aren't DCCC at people
right.
are rich people. So and what you end what up with instead is one DCCC candidate and a bunch of rich guys.
Yeah. So that's exactly what has happened. So the DCCC has spent almost $2 million in this district. They've mostly just been sort of like dragging Republicans, but they have also sort of been propping up one of the candidates who is, his name is Gil Cisneros.
Right.
He doesn't really need their money because he won the lottery for almost like $250 million,
yeah.
like 260
He's a 2010 lottery winner.
Yeah.
So that's already weird.
Right. So he has also spent a bunch of like millions of dollars of his own money. And he's running against this guy whose name's Andy Thorburn, who is a former teacher, but then he turned businessman and he also got rich. And he spent like almost $3 million of his too. So like all in, they're... Just the Democrats have spent almost $10 million in this race, most of it of the candidates' own money. And it's got nasty because, like you said, it's when you have to differentiate yourself. So, like, the DCCC, Eric Bauman, the head of the California Democratic Party, has, like, stepped in and, like, basically, like, told them that they had to, like, go to dinner together because they, like, because it's gotten, like, so
nasty.
Foul. And, like, also there's concern because it's gotten so foul that even if one of them does manage to get on the ballot, they're sort of, like... They're soured at that
point. Here's another thing I want to say about the jungle primary system, because this is another thing that happens here a lot, where two Democrats end up spending $10 million to fend each other off in a race that they haven't even won yet.
Well,
and then if two Democrats advance, then the race is more expensive than if Republicans were running against them for some reason. Like, everything seems to be more expensive in this system.
Yeah.
And also, this is a crazy problem to be having, because Democratic voters should get to decide which of these men is the right men to move forward. And then that person can spend their $10 million on figuring out what to do with the Republican challenger.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy because $10 million has been spent on probably getting, like, a second place slot in this race.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're going to have to spend a bunch more in the general.
In a district that's already voted Republican for years. Like,
exactly.
I mean, this is nonsense.
Yeah.
But no one knows what to do.
No.
And everyone in the district is pissed off.
Yeah, and there's also no polling.
Yeah, and there's no polling, right.
I
you can't know what to do.
I scoured, like, the dark reaches of the internet this afternoon.
No one knows.
It just doesn't exist.
This is just, like, a mystery race.
Yeah, it's not on Real Clear Politics. There's no, like, local polling. There's
a surprise to all of us.
I couldn't find candidate polling. Like, I could find nothing.
Which is hilarious, because then what is the $10 million buying?
Right.
Who are they? Like,
yeah.
This is chaos. In any case, moving on to the Senate, where we do get to vote.
Yes.
We have an... This is an exciting polling scenario at the moment.
I like,
because this race has gotten fun.
Yeah, this race is fun because, first off, there was the latest LA Times poll that came out last week. This is the U.S. Senate race.
This is Dianne Feinstein's seat.
Right, exactly. And she's running. She's got, again, like we said, like something like 20 some challengers or something.
Right.
Most of them not the real people.
Right.
But a couple are. Right. So, but anyway, in this latest LA Times poll, 41% of voters were undecided, and Feinstein was at 31%.
Yeah.
So undecided is currently winning the Senate race.
Yeah.
So there's, because of so many people being undecided, there's like no way to know how this is going to shake out. Obviously, it's going to be Dianne Feinstein versus somebody.
Right.
But then it's crazy after that.
Because 41% of voters haven't decided what that second person might be.
Exactly. Most polling has Kevin DeLeon in second.
Right.
That's who we voted for.
Right.
And that's who we hope gets
there.
Gets
the second place.
Exactly.
Well, if he gets the second place, then we do have a real race on our hands.
Yeah. And
because he is somebody who is running to her left and is young and is, I mean, comparatively.
Yeah.
And, I mean... Not that that's hard, I guess.
Sure.
But
no,
but that is going to be sort of like a sort of, that will be an interesting proxy race for the larger Democratic question.
Yeah. And but it's so weird, though, because of 41% being undecided and then Feinstein having 31%, there's a lot of different polls that have the second place person not having double digits.
Yeah.
So
he's barely in second.
It's going to be
crazy. With a zillion other people.
Yeah. Now, you might think to yourself, oh, Dianne Feinstein has 31% of the vote and then nobody else even has double digits. She's just going to barrel her way to victory in the general election. And like you said, I think if Kevin DeLeon wins, that she actually has a little bit of a problem. It's fascinating to me that she has 31% in that poll, because that is soft.
Real soft. Real she soft. Has been the senator here for up to 1 trillion years.
Yeah, and the fact that so many people... Look, 45% of California registered voters
are
Democrats. And 26% are independents. And you have to assume that many of those independents are voting Democrat when you look at sort of like the makeup of our state house and how big people win as Democrats in statewide elections. So to think that she only has 31% of votes, that means like a good chunk of Democrats and a good chunk of independents are not interested in voting for Dianne Feinstein and just don't know what else to do.
Yeah. Right, because there's, again, 26 other people.
Right, so exactly.
It's hard to know.
Yeah. So on a related note, these numbers just came out this week.
Yes, okay.
Republicans fell to third place in registered voters in the state of California.
They're being beaten by independents.
Yeah. Now.
So California is now a state where Democrats and independents are hashing it out.
Right.
While
right,
Republicans exactly. Green just Party their away. Way around. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I think... It's also been fascinating to me, too, that I have seen a lot of Dianne Feinstein ads.
Yeah, because they're panicking.
She probably just has, like, a bunch of money lying around because she's never really run a competitive race. But still, like, especially for a primary, I've found that to be very telling.
Is a large chance that she runs against another Democrat, even if it's not Kevin DeLeon, because of the 26 people running, a bunch are Democrats.
Sure.
But so the... fact that, I mean, she's going to have to run an expensive race against whoever this is.
So
and she's also going to face the indignity of a lot of establishment Dems not coming out for her.
I think so too.
More than I think she probably even realizes. Because I think the tide will turn fairly quickly if it's somebody to her left.
Well, but, and Kevin DeLeon is the president pro tem or whatever of our state Senate. So it's not, he's like a, you maybe haven't heard of him, but he's a real person around here. He's just not some, you know, wingding candidate that we just like pulled off the street. Like he's going to be someone who is going to have allies. He's going to have funding. He's going to be able to challenge her. And he's certainly going to be able to challenge her on the issues.
And
he's been running as the resistance candidate, which she can't do.
Exactly. And I think that is going to make this race very expensive for her, and that the fact that she's running tons of ads right now in this thing where she's the only one with any name recognition is problematic for her, regardless of what happens.
If anything, I hope that it's DeLeon, even if he doesn't win, because I think that he will, like so many Democratic closed primaries do, he's going to force her to her left.
Yeah. Also, we hope it's him because we're voting for him.
Well, right, exactly.
So if you're wondering, I hope it's him because he's who I've chosen to vote for in the race.
Exactly, yes.
But in any case, you guys, some drama with the governor's race, because Brent and I aren't voting the same way.
No, we're not.
There are, again, 32 people running.
We have the same goal. We have the same intention.
Right? We have different strategies to reach the same intention. So like I said earlier...
But here comes the whole strategy into play.
So as I said earlier, my general take is always to vote issues over strategy.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's hard to make that decision in this environment because it's hard to know whether your issues are smart strategy.
Yeah.
So Brent and I have tacked to two different sides of trying to make sure that Gavin Newsom is the governor.
Right. Lila
I'm going to vote for him.
Which seems like a reasonable enough thing to do. I voted... Wait for it.
This is scary.
Dun-dun-dun. A Republican.
Oh, my God. This is so horrifying to me. What if he ends up on the ballot? What if he wins?
Oh, God, he won't.
If he wins, though, you're going to feel really shitty about it.
I'm going to feel it. But I would feel really shitty about Antonio Villarreal.
Well, I mean, the thing that I kind of like, I feel like of the second place options, like you shouldn't invite anyone onto your ballot that you aren't comfortable
That's
winning.
Probably true. Yeah.
Like, in case a crazy thing, in case it turns out Gavin Newsom has been like murdering children in his spare time. Like, you don't know what he's up to.
I don't.
He's secretive guy. As the ads have been telling us, he's a little lazy. So like, we don't know what his life is. But so in any case, but because there are 32 people running, the race is really for second place.
Yes.
We're looking at a second place that's basically tied between John Cox and Antonio Villaraigosa in any meaningful sense.
Yeah.
John
Cox being the Republican.
He's the Republican. Villaraigosa being the idiot.
Quasi-Republican.
Yeah.
At least fashioning himself as such. I don't necessarily think that
But this is what happened with the Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez race. One, if you have two Democrats in a race, one of them has to tack right in order to differentiate themselves.
Yeah. Villaraigosa is currently... Sanchez started going around acting like a wingnut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Villaraigosa is currently just like a naysayer. Like, he's just walking around telling everyone that Newsom's being unrealistic.
Right.
And he's also... not a campaign, you guys, by the way. I'm pissed about that just on a general strategy because I think that's always the wrong strategy.
And he's also being, like, only funded by people who have funded Republicans in the past. Like, specifically... like all these charter school groups.
Yeah. I was going to say, his endorsements list is not long and it's embarrassing.
Right.
Exactly. I looked that up recently and I was like, oh, guy.
Yeah.
Except for the LA Times, who, by the way, I have something to say about the LA Times.
They're telling you to.
They've taken a hard move to the right. They are like huge antagonists to single payer healthcare for some reason. And so because of that, and single payer healthcare really is one of the standout issues in this race. It's the most important differentiating issue amongst the Democrats in this race.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the LA Times has taken this like crazy anti-single payer stance for years now, they've been doing this, means that they can't be trusted in this race because they don't know what's right.
And I did wait. I waited fairly. I filled out my whole ballot and then I waited quite a while before I actually filled this one in because I sort of like wanted to see some of the like latest polling. And I also sort of like wanted to see, oh, and then I read an article that we're going to tell you about right now. Yeah. And then I felt like I was sort of doing the right thing at that point because there's been some drama in this race because Newsom has been doing sort of like a little kind of like shady propping up of John Cox by way of what looks like it's smart. It's a sort of like a Claire McCaskill, like making sure that she runs against
also
Tariq
a little bit
move.
Like a Richard Nixon move, but okay,
well,
continue.
Well, but I'm going to tell you why I don't think it's that big of a deal. But anyway, so he's been running this, basically what is looks like an attack ad against John Cox, which he doesn't really need to do because he's ahead of John Cox by like all the points.
Right.
But he's basically like talking about how terrible John Cox is because he has been endorsed by President Trump and the NRA.
Right.
So, but if John Cox himself was running that ad, it might be the type of ad that John Cox himself would run.
Yes.
And so it sort of, it's almost an like an endorsement ad.
Right, he's running an ad.
But because it's coming from Newsom, it looks like an attack ad. But if you're a Republican and you're watching that and you're like, yeah, I want that guy.
Exactly. He's running an ad that's basically like congratulating John Cox for being the worst kind of Republican, which if you are the worst kind of Republican, reminds him that you're like him.
Right, exactly, yeah. So Democrats are sort of like calling foul play on this because they're like, you shouldn't be propping up a Republican to like be on the ticket.
And listen, I get it.
I get it too.
I think their claims that it's going to hurt Democrats down ballot are a little exaggerated.
Hogwash.
That's a bunch of ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah, because
you know what's going to hurt Democrats down ballot is if we have a nasty race between two Democrats where everyone's like, I hate both of you. Right. Please go home.
Yeah, exactly. But there are a few things that I want to say about Newsom doing this.
And then I'm also going to weigh in with whether I endorse them or not.
Great. Well, I know that you endorse this.
Yeah.
Get rid of the stupid jungle primary
system.
Because that's what is causing all of this shenanigans in this race.
This
and
so,
the shenanigans everywhere.
It's dumb.
But it's dumb.
It's a dumb system.
So endorsed by Lila Nordstrom.
Endorsed by Lila Nordstrom.
Okay, great. Also, like, I don't, you know, there are these Democrats who are sort of like calling foul on Newsom running this ad that sort of props up John Cox. But like, how different is that from Antonio Villaraigosa running an ad trashing Gavin Newsom.
Which is all he's doing, by the
way. Which is all he's doing. Yeah.
He also endorsed by Lila for one specific reason, which is that there is a difference between Newsom, like, sending a campaign aide to John Cox's campaign to, like, secretly, you know, do something or, like, paying for staff or something and him running attack ads.
Right.
He can run as many fucking attack ads as he wants. Like, running attack... Like, first of all, whoever becomes the governor needs to be able to stand up against attack ads. And
for sure.
They also, we need to have, so like that's, I don't have a general problem with attack ads as long as you also have a platform.
But all, like you said, all Antonio Villaraigosa is doing is just sort of like trashing other Democrats.
Yeah, can you tell me what he is running on?
Because
all I can tell you is that he's not running
charter
on single
schools.
Payer and charter schools. Right.
Yeah.
And also everyone, unfortunately, in this state is running on charter schools because we have terrible education policy going on in the state. Even Delaine Easton, who is running to the left of all of them, who's been endorsed by a bunch of Bernie people, she's a charter school person.
Yeah.
So you can't win.
No.
I'm voting on the single issue, single payer healthcare thing, as always.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, this is, Villaraigosa is literally just running attack ads against Newsom that don't tell you what he stands for. No. So I don't see, I agree. Anyway, endorsed by Lila Nordstrom.
Right. Also, what is he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, it's
not look for an easy contender.
I was going to say, it is still an actual competition to win something.
Yeah.
So, like,
endorsed by Lila Nordstrom.
Okay, great. Then this is too ridiculous, because the reason that the Dems are sort of like crying foul about this is that they think it's going to hurt Dems down ballot if there's a Republican on the ticket for governor. And that is just,
I can't wrap my head around that.
If on a sort of general, like, top line, like, when you hear someone say that, you're like, oh yeah, well, that sort of like makes sense. But when you really think about, like, nobody in Ed Royce's district is going to show up specifically to vote for the Republican congressional candidate just because John Cox managed to get his way on the ballot to become the governor.
Yeah, because the thing that
is too stupid to even, like, I wrote in a note as I was typing this, I was like, it made my brain hurt typing these words because it was just too dumb to think about.
The other thing that I think those Democrats are forgetting that wouldn't be true in a regular state but is going to be true in California is that every single one of these races is going to be the result of a jungle primary. Every single one of these races is only going to have two candidates, and many of those races are going to have two Democrats.
Yeah, that's so the thing. Like, we have this every year. We had two Democrats running for Senate. We've had two
this
Democrats
is what it
running
is
for governor.
To like, have this system, it's not like it would be in any other state where if the top line race is two Democrats and there's like 600 million people running down ballot and it's confusing.
Right.
Like, everyone's going to show up because their only options in many races are going to be to vote for the worst Democrat if they're a Republican. You know?
Exactly.
That's how it works here.
Right.
The Republicans who live here do that because they have to, because this is not going to be the only race that they're going to be faced with.
Right.
And they are not going to show up and then vote.
Right, they're not going to vote for the Republican in the, like I said, in the Ed Royce district because due solely based on their love of John Cox.
No, they're going to show up to vote for Antonio Villaraigosa because he's the more conservative person in the governor's on the governor's ballot,
or they're
and
not
they want
vote
a more conservative governor
or
whatever. But I mean, it's not going to make them go to the polls.
No, it's stupid. It's stupid. So everybody needs to settle down and just let Gavin Newsom win. No, I'm just kidding. Don't,
but whatever
let,
strategy,
don't let him win. But,
whatever strategy
right, exactly.
you want to
vote for him, vote
pursue.
For John Cox. Do
just don't vote for Antonio Villaraigosa. First of all, I can't imagine who is doing that because he's not liked here. He was our mayor, as you recall.
Yeah.
And you, the larger you, not just Brent. Really? But I mean,
no, I remember.
As the mayor, all I can recall about him is that everyone hated him and LA Magazine had a cover of him with the word failure written across it. Like, that's what's memorable about him. I remember him promising big things and never delivering them.
Right.
I remember him being... And another thing that bothers me about him that's just a side note is that I feel like he's being very propped up by the DNC in a way that is not actually natural to the state of California's political environment.
Sure.
Where he's one of those people, and even... Like, more so than even, like, the Castro brothers, who I think are kind of, like, a contrivance a little bit of the DNC, because they're not that compelling, actually.
They're not.
They're just
correct.
Sort of, like, they sound cool because they're twins and they're Democrats.
Right.
And they're cute, but they're, like, not Obama charismatic.
No.
This is, Villaraigosa has been another person that the National Party has tried to prop up because they've been like, oh, a high-level Latino candidate
totally.
Who is into the DNC thing, great. You know, he's always a co-chair of the DNC and stuff, of the convention.
We're always like bandying his name about to like
be to run for president and stuff
and
like that.
Like, huh?
And all he's done is been a marginally unsuccessful mayor of Los Angeles. He has not been elected to anything since then, though he has tried to run or bandied the idea of running about, you know, around all sorts of races. Because remember, he was going to run for Senate in the for Boxer's seat.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been on the planning to run for some stuff.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been getting elected to things because people didn't like him here when he actually did represent us.
Yeah.
So I need the DNC to be like, do we want to try to find a candidate who is a compelling Democrat.
Right.
Who we can find a Latino compelling Democrat. The state is fucking full of them. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a state filled with Democrats who have Latino or Latina heritage.
Yeah.
Or they're Latinx, whatever. I don't know the words anymore. But but like that's not Antonio Villaraigosa isn't the one.
No, he's not the guy.
They have to stop pretending he's the one.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's been bothering me for years because every time that I hear him being a co-chair of some national event, I'm like, why?
Yeah, I know.
Remember when Rudy Giuliani couldn't be the president? Yeah. It's the same thing.
I know.
You can't be mayor and be the president.
You know, and Gavin Newsom's not perfect.
No, of
course not.
I'm not
delusional, but the thing that like I like about Gavin Newsom, and I'm ready for it, and it's interesting, I was just talking to somebody the other day too, where they were just sort of like, where I was talking to them about the props, and they were like, God, are there any tax increases? And this is a person who is just like, this is a big Democrat.
Right.
And like she and I chat, it's a coworker of mine. She and I chat politics all the time. We generally agree about everything.
Right.
And she was like, I don't know that I'm trying to vote for another tax increase when I'm sort of like not seeing
the change,
the result of anything. And I think to a large degree that is because Jerry Brown, bless his heart, has done it, doesn't want to spend any money. Right. And I realized that he sort of like did the things that he had to do to sort of like, look,
right,
the California economy is
yeah.
doing well. He came in a crisis. We're one of the only states that is running at a surplus. But like, Gavin Newsom seems like he's ready to start writing some checks.
Yeah.
Also, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some check writing around
and
here.
I am looking for someone who says the thing. I don't want any more naysayers telling me that things like single-payer healthcare can't be discussed
right.
because they're impossible.
Right.
Like that, I'm sick of that.
Yeah.
I want him to say the thing. If we fail at doing it, then we tried.
Yeah.
You know? And we can keep trying and we can keep trying to fix it.
Yeah.
But if we have someone running the state who ultimately believes it's impossible so won't even say the thing,
right. yeah,
then
exactly.
we never are going to try.
Yeah. I agree.
And
I fear that not only has Villaraigosa not said the thing, but I also fear just
he'll never say the thing
on other issues. I feel like
he said the wrong thing.
He's either said the wrong thing or is not willing to sort of like I said, write some checks.
He's not that guy.
Yeah,
he's been a careful sort of mainline Democrat
totally.
For a reason because 100%. The DNC has been his only base.
Yeah.
So in any case, there are other primaries too.
Yeah,
eight states are going to the polls on Tuesday. It's us and then Alabama, Iowa, that's Brent's home state, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Mostly boring.
Mostly boring, actually. In Montana, they're voting to figure out who John Tester's...
Right, the Republican that's going to run against John Tester. That's a
challenger is going to be.
The Republicans have their eyes on
Right, they're hoping to flip
obviously.
That seat.
Also, there's an interesting congressional race in Alabama, where the incumbent, who's a Republican, her name's Martha Roby, she's got a lot of challenges, including a former Democrat, which I don't like, but that seems like that's probably what's happening in
Alabama.
But anyway, she is taking heat from all sides because she is fairly conservative herself, but like also said in 2016 that she was not going to vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So she won re-election even still, but like now she's running against a former Democrat and also a longtime aide of Roy Moore's.
In fact,
so, I mean, she's
Alabama.
Really, that's it, Alabama. Who knows what's going
Hopefully
on
Hopefully that aide wins because that
right,
seems like another opportunity to pick up a seat there.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly.
And then there's also in Iowa, there's a governor's race.
Yeah, so.
We've got a primary for a governor's race.
Yeah, and this has been actually really, my mom has been telling me all about this because I sort of like haven't been following it, but there's been some sort of some Me Tooing going on in this Iowa race because
sex scandals.
Yeah, because Nate Bolton, who is in the state house, who a lot of people liked, who was sort of like leading the charge when they were having all of the protests for like collective bargaining issues or whatever. Like he was, so he was sort of like running as he's like a young guy or whatever. He sort of like got caught up in some sort
got
of like
me too'd.
Was and sort of didn't really deny it and then dropped out of the race.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actually still in second place anyway. So it was, but now it definitely looks like this guy named Fred Hubble is going to win. And if you're from Iowa, the name Hubble like
means something,
means money.
Okay.
Like that he's like a gazillionaire. He's sort of moderate, but you know maybe he can just win himself or buy himself the governor's seat.
The Bloomberg model,
even a moderate in this case is better than Kim Reynolds, who is signing fetal heartbeat laws.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of people think that she is vulnerable in part due to that.
I would imagine she is because I feel like every time I hear news about Iowa, it's like some wacko right wing thing is happening. And I, as much as everything I know about Iowa is based on things that you've told me and then wild assumptions I've made.
Sure.
I always think of Iowa as like a fairly kind of moderate state, in a state that moderates itself.
Yes.
You know, a state that tries to kind of like be reasonable.
Yeah, like even the people who are the senators right now, I don't like either of them by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
It's Joni Ernst and what the hell is that? Chuck Grassley have moments of clarity. I mean,
well,
it was not that long ago we were telling you about Joni Ernst like supporting like the transgender people being able to be in the military because she was in the military and she was like, well, if they want to like be fighting in the military, then like, hello.
Well, and
so,
this is a
like,
state
they,
that up until Joni Ernst was elected had a very progressive senator.
Yeah,
so
and the entire
not...
time that I basically, like, my entire childhood was Democratic governors. We had two-term Democrats right in a row. I mean, I 16 years of my life, we had Democratic governors. Yeah. So, yeah, yes, they've been moving to the right, but they're also, they're not as insane as Kim Reynolds is.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And they don't want to look that insane.
No, that's like. The thing.
I don't think Iowans like this PR. Alabama, you know? So, yeah. In any case. And then meanwhile, New York is not voting on Tuesday, but they had some drama in the last few weeks with their governor's race or governor's primary. So remember when Tom Perez, our intrepid DNC leader, said repeatedly on national television that the national party shouldn't and wouldn't be endorsing in primaries?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah, I remember him saying it a few times. I do too. Yeah. Well, joke's on us.
Right.
Because on last Thursday, or this was not this, it was last Thursday, whatever, it was two Thursdays ago. He got on stage in Long Island and endorsed Andrew Cuomo for governor of New York.
That's right.
Despite the fact that Andrew Cuomo is in
a heated primary.
Is it a heated primary and a kind of sticky primary with Cynthia Nixon, who everyone keeps calling a former actress, but I just want to remind everyone that she is also a major schools advocate.
I was going to say, she's been in politics, not necessarily in various capacities,
in the political space in New York for years.
Yeah.
So I'm sick of everyone pretending like that her only moniker is Sex and the City actress.
Right.
Just because in New York City, she really has made a commitment to improving public
education.
And
people know that.
Right. So in any case, moving back to this. This has kind of reignited a little bit of a war. Because as you know, Keith Ellison was made his deputy chair.
Yeah.
And Keith Ellison was not told about this, nor did he support it.
No.
Well, and
of course he didn't.
Well, of course. Right. Yeah. I mean, but so.
And people who probably, if you were to ask them privately, support Cuomo, also don't agree with this.
Because like they know this is literally exactly what they said they wouldn't do.
This is like one of those unforced errors that we talk about Democrats doing all the time. Like, this didn't need to happen. It was unnecessary. We know that if Tom Perez like lived in New York, he's probably going to vote for Andrew Cuomo. We're not idiots. Right. He didn't need it. He already had, you know, Hillary Clinton had already endorsed him, which
another thing that I'm like, get out of town.
Yeah, exactly. But like, he didn't need Tom Perez to swoop in and endorse him. Like, it was just such a stupid thing.
Especially because
this
is like a proxy race for the entire problem that the DNC has been wrapped up in since the 2016 election.
Yes.
This is a challenger on the left that is supported by most mainstream left people and a lot of really high profile New York Democrats as well. You know, the Zephyr Teachout kind of genre of people. And so this is a race explicitly about the very challenge that Bernie Sanders posed to Hillary Clinton, supported by the very people that supported Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
And the DNC made the exact same set of assumptions about the race and about their role in the race that they made in that race that pissed everyone off in the first place, that caused the ouster of the last DNC chair and required, you know, and caused Tom Perez to have to take Keith Ellison as his deputy.
Yeah.
Like, this is the exact thing. And all he did, he got up on stage and then started talking about how Cuomo has this great record of progressive accomplishments.
Okay.
And, like, Cuomo is good at the, like, headline stuff. He's good at being, like, banning fracking, gay marriage. Yeah. Like, things that ultimately are meaningful in some sense.
Sure.
I mean, we certainly applaud those things. But don't kind of underline the role he's played in politics in a broader sense.
Yeah.
So he is not he's a moderate Democrat. He is not a progressive Democrat.
Yeah.
That is unequivocally understood by everyone in New York State. So the idea of having the DNC chair get up and just tell us how progressive he is is also a little
insulting.
Nobody was buying it. Nobody was buying it, obviously. But also, like, Nixon's challenge has been about how out of sync Cuomo is.
Yeah.
So her whole campaign is about the fact that Cuomo is not progressive, essentially.
Right.
And this just sort of showed that.
Yeah. Oh, it did. Yeah.
This did nothing for Cuomo.
Yeah.
It did damage to Perez and the DNC.
I think so, too. Yeah. And also, Cuomo, I think he has been silly about some of these endorsements to a certain degree. Because having Hillary Clinton, and he's had Joe Biden out there for him as well. Like, I just think
these aren't the people.
No, he has, especially if he's wanting to run for
president
in 2020. I just feel like hitching your wagon to these
like dying,
people, exactly,
moderate
like,
Democratic stars.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not the thing.
Well, and the other thing is that Cuomo has basically been embroiled in like a constant war with Bill de Blasio, who does have progressive cred since the beginning of de Blasio's term. They hate each other. And so this has really become a larger proxy war about the role of the city in the state and the fact that Cuomo can't seem to bring the state together as the kind of like in a Democratic state as the son yeah. of a very popular political figure, because yeah. Mario Cuomo was very popular. Yeah. And Mario Cuomo, by the way, when he won his primary against Ed Koch, my mom was telling me about this while I was home, that was a race where literally Ed Koch had been the mayor of New York, major name recognition, you know. Cuomo literally came out of nowhere and had a landslide win that had not been predicted by anyone. So it was literally one of those races where everyone was like, Koch is going to win, and, you know, Koch is fine or whatever. And then at, like, 9:03, everyone was like, Cuomo's not so bad. You know, like, so in any case, this is, I think that they have made the mistake also of assuming that because he comes from this kind of pedigree in New York, that is enough to kind of, like, excuse a lot of these unforced errors that he's made.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's true. Yeah. The Cuomo thing, as my mom has been saying all week, it's not a dynasty. There was a good Cuomo, and now there's kind of a mediocre Cuomo. And Chris Cuomo is probably the one who should have been running for office anyway, because he's way more charming than Andrew Cuomo, and he's just, like, better looking, too.
Yeah, he's got guns.
Yeah, like, exactly. we mean the figurative kind, not the literal kind.
Yes.
But, I mean, like, this just, like, this is also after he repeatedly has refused to endorse in races where it would have been meaningful.
Right.
He wouldn't endorse against Dan Lipinski.
Right.
Even though Dan Lipinski was like
a pro-life race,
he was a Republican, and he finally had a challenger, and they wouldn't endorse in that race. They wouldn't endorse in the Georgia gubernatorial primary. Like, there were all of these races, and so the only thing that he could say about why he'd endorsed in this race was because him and Andrew Cuomo are friends. So, like, is the criteria just that you're, like, good friends with Tom Perez?
That's it. Yeah.
And, like, maybe have, and that is, like, enough for him to be like, okay. Are we watching a replay of the presidential primary from 2016? Is there a way that we could not play the same role in it this time so we don't lose all credibility and look like idiots and then ultimately lose a seat that should have just been easily ours?
Right.
Oh, I'll do that. Like, it just doesn't...
No.
In any case, Tom Perez, I suspect, on his way out.
I hope so.
I have suspicions. Suspections.
Good, I like it. Good.
But we have some good news, too.
Yeah.
Virginia... Brent wrote this headline as VA passes Medicaid expansion, and I spent a long time being like, what does that mean? But he meant Virginia, not the VA.
Yeah.
Not the Veterans Association.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But they finally took the money, the Medicaid money.
Yes.
They finally took the ACA expansion.
That's right. Yeah. So the...
They still have a Republican-controlled Senate there.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? If there's one thing that elected officials... want to do, it's to continue to keep their jobs. And they saw, so the Virginia Senate was not up for re-election
last year
when the House of Delegates was, but they saw what happened in the House of Delegates.
It didn't go to their plan.
Right, exactly. They went from, like, having 2/3 majority to almost losing the majority.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were like, hey, you know what?
There's some things people wanted out of this.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple Republicans finally jumped ship in the Senate, and the House of Delegates had already approved this. They had voted on it themselves. So, like, as soon as it came to them, they were like, yes, hello, we did this already.
Exactly.
So it is now passed. Up to as many as 400,000 people are going to be able to get health care in Virginia.
Obviously, it's not great because it had to go through a Republican Senate. So they allow the waiver, they're applying for a waiver that would let them implement work requirements and co-payments and stuff like that. But is that better than not having taken the money?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's where they were just months
and
ago.
And it's really funny, too, because it was actually that, you know, Trump himself is very much against them doing this, but it was his allowance for states to be able to implement
these
waivers that really was the thing that allowed these Republicans to switch in the first place. No. So this really, like, the fact, like, I don't agree with the fact that they can apply for these waivers, but it was really Trump saying that they could that is what got this done in the first place. So that really is
I love when anything goes against his favor.
Same. I love it when things blow up in his face.
So they're expecting the uninsured rate to fall about 5% there.
Yeah.
It's still going to be about 10.9%. And this is where we remind you that the reason that single payer is the most important issue in our governor's race in California is because that is still too many people.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is an issue in many states. Yeah, a lot of states have uninsured rates higher than that.
That's like, applaud... Going from 14.9% to 10.9%.
Any new person with insurance is a better off person. Right.
But, like, clearly, this isn't the answer.
Like, We need to do something different that doesn't require 10% of the population to die in gutters. Applaud yourself for having
done this.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're doing this and think this is the last answer, and 11%, you know, 1 in 10 of the people who live in your state is still unable to have health care, then you didn't do it.
Right. You need to keep trying. You need to to try a new thing. Like, it's like how we're saying, not every single pair experiment will go smashingly the first try.
No.
But it's the goal. So you keep trying. Yes. You figure it out. Yep. You know, you work to figure it out. We're working to figure it out. This is on the path, certainly, but we're not there. It's good work.
Yeah.
Well done. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
And in possibly the most important news of this week,
yeah,
the North Korea summit's back on. And why? Because Trump loves a novelty envelope. That's why.
He really does.
So apparently, Trump wrote Kim Jong-un his, what my mom has been calling his Dear John letter.
So good.
A couple weeks ago.
Delivered by one of their diplomats.
Right. And Kim thought, well, I can play this game.
Yeah.
And so he decided to return fire by making an exciting plan to write a letter and then putting it in a comically sized large envelope.
It's huge, guys.
Filled with not the longest letter, but the world's largest letter, for sure.
Yeah. That Trump at one point told journalists that it was like a very nice letter and he appreciated it, but then minutes later said that he hadn't opened it yet.
Right. And so it turned out it didn't even matter what the letter was, because all that mattered was that he got a giant envelope.
That's right. And
delivered
posed,
by a, and posed with a picture.
With it. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. He literally said, after saying that it was, you know, a great letter, a very interesting letter, and people sort of asked what the flavor of the letter was, what the letter said, and he said, I haven't seen the letter yet. I purposely didn't open the letter. I haven't opened it. I didn't open it in front of the director. I said, would you want me to open it? He said, you can read it later.
Yeah.
Then he
also
added,
I
may be in for a big surprise.
Because I'm functionally illiterate.
Exactly.
So I had to wait until someone could read it to me in English.
Exactly. But so basically, Trump, like a small child, was won over in a diplomacy matter by a large novelty envelope.
Yeah. I wonder if there was like a Hallmark card that like played a song when it opened or something like that, right?
Well, I also...
There's like a pop-up situation.
If you haven't seen the letter, I would recommend looking at a picture. There are pictures of them posing with this letter, because the only thing I could think of as I was looking at the picture was, isn't he worried this makes his hands look small?
Yes. Oh, I know. And the internet had a field day with it, too, where, like, people were making it, like, even, like, twice the size that it actually was, which is hilarious.
I know. It was already, too. It was already comical.
Was that Kim Jong-un, like, trolling
yes,
Donald Trump's
I think
hand
it was.
Size? God, yes.
This guy
gets
a
it.
Troll. he gets trolling.
Yeah, he does.
He is naturally gifted at it in a way that I don't think a person who hasn't had real internet in their country in years should be able to.
I know, right?
But in any case.
Yeah. Well, he has real internet.
Well, right. Yeah, he's always had real internet. Possibly. And also during his education in Switzerland.
Right, Switzerland. Yeah, exactly.
And his affair with Dennis Rodman. He's had plenty of time to peruse the internet.
Exactly.
In any case, in final news, we already told you that Roseanne was canceled.
Yeah.
I guess we just thought we'd mention it again.
Yeah.
You shouldn't say racist things on Twitter if you want to keep your TV show.
No, and that's the thing. You
That is the thing.
That is the thing. Right. But, yeah, I mean, you can't be a network television star and a racist right-wing internet troll.
At least for long.
You just
apparently you can start.
You can start.
You can do a season.
Right. And that is sort of like what has so many things have angered me about this. Like, most of all the racism, obviously. But, like, you know, it's not as if Roseanne had stopped being a racist from previous racist comments that she has put on Twitter
for years
over
at this point.
Decades.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
but
mean...
It is, this whole thing has been really jarring for people, I think. And even Michael Moore wrote, like, a long thing on Facebook about it, because this really... Roseanne Barr is going through something.
Yeah.
And the nation is also going through something. So in some ways, she's like a good proxy for the struggle we're all facing, where it's like everyone has turned out to be insane.
Yeah. But she has...
But she in particular
has turned out to be insane.
Turned out to be insane in a way that makes it... She, like, he, you know, Michael
like
Moore talks about...
Like that she should find a padded room somewhere.
Yes. Like, right. Michael Moore says that she suffered a traumatic brain injury when she was younger. Because he knew her over
the
years.
He's known her for a long time,
and
right.
Yeah. She, you know, he knew her because they went and campaigned for Kerry together. Right. And, like, there are just so many things about this that are confusing in part because the sort of unpredictability of Roseanne has been... sort of a slowly evolving crisis that we have just somehow given a larger megaphone to, the more of a crisis it's become.
Yeah.
And, like, she is long ago past the point where she was embarrassing herself and all of us.
Yes.
And we should have just stopped giving her the platform.
And she knew it because she has joked about how her kids have told her that they're going to take her phone away from her and stuff like that. So she's not – it's not as if – you know, I guess you can't be that crazy if you know you're crazy.
I guess. But, I mean, I also feel like she has, like – to some degree, this is our problem because we kept being excited by it.
Yeah.
And there was a point where we should have been like, oh, Roseanne is going through something. Let's stop putting her on television.
Sure.
Like, let's not report on her tweets anymore. And let's stop inviting her to speak places because it turns out something has gone on.
Right.
This is someone who ran for president on the Green Party ticket not long ago. Like, something has gone on with her.
Yeah.
So, like, it's sort of on us not to cure her traumatic brain injury or whatever it is.
Right.
But
Or to apologize for her racism.
Certainly not that.
Yeah.
But it is maybe incumbent upon us to be like, we're no longer interested in what Roseanne has to say. It turns out she's not sane.
Yes.
You know?
Oh,
I think that's something that is fair to do.
Yeah.
We should have done it a long time ago, obviously. And not that I wasn't sort of excited that if we were going to have reboots of every show on television, that one of my favorite shows would be rebooted.
I know.
But I'm also kind of like, I could have lived without it if we could have saved ourselves from this moment.
And here I thought it was going to be Katy Perry that was the undoing of ABC.
I know.
It was Roseanne all along.
All along.
God.
In any case, that's the news this week. So we're going to be doing summer hours here at the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
We are going to be going down to
can't get them at work, so I'm happy to have them.
Exactly. We're going to be only doing the podcast every other week unless there is a major news event of national importance that we need to report on, obviously. We're not going to
getting canceled.
Right. We're not going to stop watching the news. But and we're going to hopefully use that time to bring some special projects forward and stuff like that. Because heading into election season, we want to be on our A game.
Yeah. We want to geared up.
Exactly.
We want to be in our right minds.
In our right minds. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we will see you not next week, but the week after.
No.
And
but you'll be hearing from us.
But you'll be hearing from us.
We'll be posting on Facebook.
Exactly.
We'll be on Twitter. We'll probably
available on the social media.
Telling you things about the primary later this week.
We'll definitely be doing that.
We're not leaving you.
We're not leaving you. So look out for us in 2 weeks. And if you haven't already, go follow us on social media because we will be talking a lot about the primary results for this week and next week.
Yeah, exactly. Also, we're like the only show that doesn't go on hiatus.
Seriously.
By the way.
And also,
Bill Margo's on hiatus.
We've been doing this for more than 6 years.
I know.
We're also just like the longest running news podcast. Actually, I think we often recognize patterns that no one else can see just because
we
have
talk
been
about
doing this
every
for
single
so
week.
Long.
Yeah.
And there's no other news podcast that has been doing this long with this focus.
Yeah.
So, you know, tell your friends about the podcast.
That's right.
But in any case, go check us out on social media. Go check out our website. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Bye.